it should be. And I think a lot of fitness professionals will tell you it's a case of do as I say, not as I do. Mm-hmm. I should have known better than to try and hop into distances like that without proper training.
Hey, welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. Hey, this is another best of episode. This time I'm going way back to episode 19, where I had my first conversation with Heather Hart. Heather is a running coach, an adventurer, and I follow her on social media, and she had a second episode as well. But this episode, she talks about dealing with burnout. Now, if you're a regular listener, I've improved a lot since episode 19. I just do things differently now than I did back then. So you can kind of laugh at some of my awkwardness from back then. But the content is good. Dealing with burnout is something that we all face at one time or another. And so hopefully that what she has to say again, and for some of you who haven't been listening since the beginning, I wanted to bring back some of the things that Heather shared here, just because it's appropriate for any time. So thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy my conversation with Heather Hart. Welcome to Ultramarathon Mindset Trail Talk. I have been looking forward to this guest, Heather Hart, for a long time. I read her blog. She is a running coach and an exercise physiologist, I think. Like,
that's okay. It.
And I wanted to have her come on and just have a chat, and because I think she has some things that would be helpful for all of us to hear. I'd love to hear her tell the story verbally. I read it, and she's a great writer, so I enjoyed reading it, but I know that the telling of it here on this will be a different hearing. So I'm looking forward to it as well. So, welcome, Heather, to Trail Talk. I'll say again for the people, the idea of this show or this time is like running on trails with friends. And so we always say that have an open and honest conversation, and what's said on the trail stays on the trail, except we're sharing it with you all. So so it is low key. It's going to be just like a conversation rather than an interview, and that's at least that's what I'm going to try to do. So welcome, Heather. And I don't have any. I know a friend of mine, Denny Cray. He has a podcast, and he always asks, "What's your favorite distance to run and why?" But usually, I say, "Tell me a little bit. How did you get into running in particular, and then ultra running in specifics?"
Oh, right. Well, how much time do we have? So let's see. Long story short, my older sister started running. And she got into triathlon and running, probably around 2000, 2001. And she suckered me into my first half marathon.
Okay, that's usually where it starts, yeah.
Yeah, right. I did not train at all. I was 21 years old, I think, and thought, you know, who needs to train, right? Mm-hmm. And so I finished, and I couldn't walk for like a week, and it was awful. And I couldn't wait to do it again. Yeah. But shortly after that, I was pregnant with my oldest son. And so, you know, the running didn't happen. But as soon as I had him, I was trying to lose the baby weight, you know, mm-hmm. as a lot of people want to do. And I started running. And I'll never forget that first run. It was awful. Like, I suffered my way through a mile. I ran, shuffled, walked. I got a blister. I went home. I threw up. It was bad. It was
really
bad.
Oh, my goodness. you had it all in 1 mile. That's pretty good.
Yeah. And so the next day, I was like, well, I'm going to do it again. And then the day after that and the day after that, and probably just like they say, 14, 21 days later, I was hooked. And That was 2006, 2007. And so, yeah, that's when I became a runner. That's when I like mm-hmm. to say I became mm-hmm. a runner. 2015 is when I attempted my first ultra marathon. Okay. And that was Infinitus, which is a smaller race up in Vermont, put on by the Endurance Society. And it's an incredible race. They have everything from like a, I believe a 16 mile run to a 888K race mm-hmm. and everything in between. And anyway, my husband and I, we signed up for the 48 hour version. We
made it. Wow. Wow. Yeah, you jumped right in. You didn't go for a 50K, like just over a marathon.
But the thing is we only made it 52 miles in less than, gosh, I want to say it wasn't even like 18 hours and we quit. We were like, no. mm-hmm. But I was hooked on it after that. So that's kind of how I got started with ultra running.
My goodness. Wow. Yeah. So your first ultra was. So did you run all night? No, you didn't. You said you ran 18 hours. So how late in the night did you get?
I want to say, gosh, it might have even been less than 18 hours. I feel like we quit somewhere around like 2 a.m, you know, at that point where you're like, I'm really tired and you don't know yet how to push through that. So that's mm-hmm. when we quit.
Okay. Yeah. And that was 2015. So then did you did that? And there are some people, you know, who go through the idea of like, you know, you're there, you go, I'm never going to do this again. When you're in the middle of it, like, why am I doing this? I'll never do this again. And then sign up again. Did that happen to you?
Yeah. Well, I think it was a huge slice of humble pie because I went into that thinking, oh, I'm going to go run 100 miles. How hard could it be? And mm-hmm. obviously that didn't happen. And so that kind of spurred on the enthusiasm to try again. And so for me, gosh, I want to say it was just later that summer we tried, you know, we did some shorter distances, some 50Ks and 50 miles. And mm-hmm. Yeah, there was no, I'm never doing that again for me. That was, I knew right away that
you knew that was something you wanted to do, even though, mm-hmm. yeah.
Absolutely.
So you said that you had, we talked before we started this podcast that you are an exercise physiologist. Was that your career before you were doing this racing?
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, it was back in 2006 when I gave birth to my oldest son, started running, fell in love with it. And it was just kind of the snowball effect of feeling so good as a runner and realizing how much fitness can change lives. And I knew then I wanted to do something in the fitness industry. And as we were kind of talking about earlier, for me, I already had a science background and I just love to learn. So I knew that a weekend certification, you know, going to take a regular personal training exam wasn't enough for me. So I went back to school for exercise physiology for my bachelor's degree in exercise science. And it was a long process because then I ended up having another baby in there. So mm-hmm. back to school, two babies. But that was around 2006 that I started that process.
Okay. So you were doing the exercise, you're working in the exercise field before you became an ultra runner.
Long before.
Okay. So yeah, you had that background of that knowledge. So was there any, was that helpful? The things that you studied and you taught as a coach and helping in your own running?
Yeah, it should be. And I think a lot of fitness professionals will tell you it's a case of do as I say, not as I do. Mm-hmm. I should have known better than to try and hop into distances like that without proper training. But but yes, it has helped, you know, immensely, you know, just understanding how training works and how our body responds to it and the science behind all of it. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. So just from a perspective, I've read, and I can't remember the guy's name, but he talks about the effect of the brain on the, mm-hmm. Is that something that you get into as well? The connection between the brain and the body?
A little bit. Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's so many different parts of exercise science. You've got your nutrition and the physiology, and of course, you know, the psychology side of it, which is something we deal with clients often. We try not to go too in depth with it, you know, if that's what you're referring to, kind of like the sports psychology side of it.
Sports psychology. Yeah. There was sports psychology, and I cannot remember the guy's name. In fact, I read the book earlier this year, and I've read a couple of others since, and I don't retain names of books. I mean, I can't remember the author's name, and I can't remember the title, but he's a running coach, mm-hmm. but he kind of specializes in training the brain of, there's a whole science behind the feedback that the brain gets. I can't remember who it was who said that the brain kind of acts like a central governor. That's the theory, I guess, behind it, is that your physical body is actually capable of doing a lot more, but the brain is like a safety valve. And so that when you're getting to be, well, David Goggins says that when you feel like you can't go any farther, you're only at 40%. And so that's kind of, it's all the whole thing of the brain is what holds people back. I just wondered if that was something that you've gotten.
Absolutely. And I think that's something, you know, that's super important for first time ultra runners, is to kind of respect that, you know, what you're talking about. There's so much to be said for experience and for knowing, like, okay, I've pushed this far before, even though my body's telling me no to stop, you know, I can keep going. Sorry, we just got a UPS delivery.
It's a little late, yeah. You're an hour ahead of us, so.
Yeah, like, it's bedtime, what's going on? But anyway, as I was saying, there's so much to be said for learning which should I listen to, my brain or should I listen to my body, you know, especially in the ultra world, because you want to quit 10 million times, as I'm sure you know. Your body's constantly going, okay, we can do this. No, we can't. Oh, I want to stop. I want to go to bed. And I think that the people who are successful are the ones who have learned when to listen to your body and when to listen to the brain. Mm-hmm. When to tell your brain, no, we've got this, we're okay. Or, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's something that, until you've been there, you know, how do you teach somebody that? I don't think you can. I think it's something that you need to experience.
Right. And then getting kind of jumping ahead to where you go. Tell a little bit more about your history. Is you were doing those. Now, then you started getting into doing 100 miles, mm-hmm. and running those. And from what I remember, you said you placed you did podium finish on some of the ultras that you did.
Yeah. Now, I mean, not to take away from that, but I'm not doing any huge races, you know, but.
Well, the podium finish is still, yeah, I mean, at that distance, that's impressive.
Back here.
Yeah.
But, South Carolina, we don't have a huge ultra scene, like maybe out on the West Coast, but mm-hmm. I can hold my own, I guess.
Well, that's good. Now, was that in 100 mile? 100 mile distance.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's impressive to be able to run, to be able to place like that. Now I was at that point, but only because I outlasted everybody in my age group.
And so, yeah. We were talking about this, just last weekend, 2 weekends ago. I volunteered at Hellhole 100 here in South Carolina. We actually had a race that went on, which was awesome. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about how one of the cool things about those distances, like the 100K, 100 mile and beyond, is that you can't predict who's going to win or who's going to podium early in the race, because the strongest runner who has a huge lead could fall apart at mile 80. You know, you just don't know. So really it does kind of boil down to who can outlast everybody else. Yeah, you know, it's not always the fastest person.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And the day. I mean, some of the elite runners, I've seen – some videos of Western States, and you know, there was somebody who had a huge lead and then the digestive issues, and just, you know, basically they didn't finish.
It happens all the time. Yeah.
Which is the kind of the appeal of the 100 mile distance.
Exactly.
You can do everything right and still have you still have things happen.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you ran quite a few, and then you, from what I remember, you said you ran, you know, you just kept doing more and more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah.
How was that progression? What was, you know, kind of what was going through your mind of continuing to do more?
Right. So, one of the things I've noticed in the ultra world, especially as it's becoming more and more popular, is that we're seeing, a lot of like everyday average Joes who are able to accomplish amazing things, which is so cool. It's one of the reasons why we all are attracted to this sport. Mm-hmm. But I think that it gives a false sense of security that like, okay, you can see these people pushing really hard. I can do it too. I can keep pushing, you know, but our bodies are only capable of so much, really, you know. Mm-hmm. We're not unbreakable. So what happened to me personally is, if we go back in time, I would have to pinpoint this burnout to, it started in the summer of 2018. I have to think about what year we're in. I got into Barclay Fall Classic, which I was really excited about because I was registered for it the year before and I had to back out of it because I had to have a hernia surgery, which is another. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I got in for 2018. I started training really, really hard. I mean, I was pushing because that race is, you know, it's a tough one. And yeah. I knew that. I live here at sea level, so I was pushing really hard. The week of the race, we got hit with a hurricane. I can't even remember which one it was right now. We've had so many in the last couple of years. And our area was evacuated. So I couldn't go to the race. You know, I had to figure out what I was going to do with my pets and my kids and where mm-hmm. we were going to go. So I had to cancel that. And I was really bummed about it. So I hopped right into the next thing, you know, keep training. A month later, my dad unexpectedly passed away. So that was like a huge, you know, kind of emotional stress, which is something we don't take into account either. That
mm-hmm. right.
really stressed everybody. From there, I started training for the Georgia Death Race, which is another absolutely brutal race. And while training for that, I went and ran a 100-miler. There's so many races that I ended up doing in there that I can't even keep track of them anymore. I don't even know. So there's that one, 100-miler in January. 2 weeks later, went and raced a 50K and podiumed in that one. And I shouldn't have raced that one. It hurt a lot 2 weeks later. And then maybe 2 weeks after that was the Georgia Death Race. And that didn't go very well because my body was, you know, starting to crash and burn. And anyway, I could tell you about all these different races, but what happened is I kept thinking that like, okay, well, this one didn't work out, so the next one will. Let's just keep pushing. Mm-hmm. Everyone else can seemingly run 100 milers every other month. Why can't I? And again, where I say do as I say, not as I do, with my background and my education, I should have known better that this was, we're on a fast track to burnout town, but I just kept pushing until my body started giving up. I tore a calf muscle last summer. When I came back from that, my times, my racing times, even my training times were just decreasing. They were just slowly getting slower, you know, even mm-hmm. with the same amount of effort. I wasn't sleeping well. I was mean. You could ask my kids and my husband. I probably wasn't the best person to be around. I started gaining weight, even though I had, you know, this massive training cycle. And, you know, to add in there to a little disclaimer, I was also working in a gym, teaching classes all day. Okay. You know, so that's even more on top of mm-hmm. that. So, yeah, it was a big old crash and burn. And it was probably in November of last year, I went to do a 25K on a trail that I know like the back of my hand. And it was a miserable experience. My body was like, we're not doing this anymore. So that was kind of when I was like, okay, we're going to take a step back. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's time. You have to. And it took a couple months, but it's like a whole new body here.
So that's good. So you were... I guess there's a couple of things you said that it's like interested me. How did you know? And what was your body doing? I mean, you said you ran the 25K and you could just tell that, you know, what was the sensations you were having? What did it feel like?
Yeah. So I've been running for, 13, 14 years now. And it was, for me, I was previously at a point where this, I always hate saying this because it makes me feel kind of like a running snob or something, but I could walk out the door and run a marathon. No problem. Like, it wouldn't be my fastest, but that was my endurance base that I could just do that. Mm-hmm. Yet here I am at this 25K and I can't even run 2 minutes without having to take a walk break. It felt like the hardest effort I've ever put forth. Like, it was just so hard. And it's a weird sensation when you know I should be fit. I'm running, 50, 60 miles a week. What's happening to me? Why is this getting harder? Yeah, right. It was weird.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sounds so, and all of us have had, I've experienced those days when your body just isn't quite there. And just because there's, and there's other days you run and it just kind of feels like you're floating on air.
Yeah.
that's kind of the feeling that I get. You're just like, you feel like I should be doing faster.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And that was kind of like a culmination of a lot of runs feeling that way. We all have bad runs from time to time, but that was kind of like a turning point where I realized this is not getting better. You're getting slower and you're more tired and everything hurts.
Yeah. So the other people who are doing the kinds of things that you said, I should be able to do what they're doing. How do they do it? I guess that's the thing. I wonder is, are they really doing what they put out on Facebook?
That's the thing, is that, you're always going to have your people who are just genetically gifted, when it comes to athletics. Their bodies can withstand higher stress levels. They recover better. And it could be for a number of reasons, regardless of genetics. Maybe they just, their diet's really well. Maybe they don't have any outside stressors in their life, so that they can recover well. But I also think that in the ultra world, a lot of this is so new to people that perhaps we're not quite either seeing a lot of people who are actually burning out yet, or people don't realize it. I mean, I don't know about your Facebook feed, but mine, I see the same people all the time who are racing and then injured, and then they try to race again and then they're injured, and it's a constant cycle. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that they see it. I don't think a lot of people see it. I think that they just think, it's a tough race. It's a tough sport.
It's just the way it is. It's just like people, they expect injuries. They expect.
Mm-hmm. And in the sport, we almost like glamorize, like, look how tough you are. You did this, and then a month later you went and did that. But is that really healthy for us? Is this a good thing?
Yeah. So when you got to the point where you were feeling that way, what did you do? I mean, did you coach yourself?
Did you go? Yeah. Well, and the great thing about being married to another running coach is that sometimes they'll give you the sit down ultimatum of like, listen, you need a break. You need to stop. So, and then, to top that off, I had some other issues. I had a, I had a bladder prolapse that was kind of related, kind of not related, but the stress on my body, also contributed to that. So that made me actually have to stop and be like, okay, you're literally falling apart. You've got to take a rest. So, the first thing I did is this was December when I finally was like, we need to stop. I've got to be done. I went online and canceled every single race registration I had for 2020.
Oh, wow. Well,
working out. I mean,
who knew that you were ahead of the curve, right?
I know. Exactly. I feel bad for everybody having their races canceled, but I'm kind of like, that worked out for me. But, so that's the first thing I did. And I think by canceling the races, it took a lot of stress, more stress off my shoulders. It took a lot of pressure off. So yeah, that was a good thing to do.
So, what was your thinking that led you to burnout? to keep pushing that much? What it was there a was something behind that that you?
Lots of things, I think. I mean, one, obviously, the loss of my father was a big deal, you know, and we all deal with grief differently. And for me, running was one of those things. But I also think that often when we're really close to reaching a goal and we don't quite get it, we think, okay, well, I'm so close. Why don't I just keep pushing? You know, and so for me, there was a couple of DNFs in there. There was the Barkley Fall Classic, which I was trained for and then couldn't go to because of the hurricane. So instead of taking a proper rest period after a full training cycle and, you know, all I missed was the race, should have rested. I didn't. I just kept going. Same thing with the Georgia Death Race, that I ended up DNFing that race. And gosh, I want to say around like maybe mile 40, maybe it was probably less than that. I didn't even make it halfway through that race before I crashed. But again, had that huge build, I should have stopped and taken my rest period, and I didn't. I just kept going. So I think that's something you see in a lot of runners who don't quite make their goal for whatever reason, is instead of respecting the training cycle, which includes that downtime, we just keep going, keep that we can build infinitely, and it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. And I experienced that. I had my first attempt at 100 was a DNF, and now it was physically, I was fine. I was going through, but we had rain. And so turned the trails into just so slippery. I couldn't navigate them. I'm not a front of the pack runner. So, you know, I was on that cusp anyway. And so I missed the cutoff by 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And so my friends then talked me into another 100 that was a month later. I didn't keep going. So, but I could tell that recovery period, you know, I was kind of on the border, and that if I had continued doing one after another, I probably would have ended up very similar to where you're at.
Right. And I think that, you know, a lot of people assume, oh, well, my legs aren't sore, I must be fine. You know, and that's definitely not the case at all. There is so much going on the cellular level, you know, internally, the stress that's going on, just different hormone changes because of the stress levels. And you can't necessarily see or feel that. Like, you can feel delayed onset muscle soreness in your legs, you know? So just because you're not sore doesn't mean you don't need that recovery period.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the soreness went away within several days. I helped my wife and I physically up and down. And so, you know, I was doing physical work like the Monday after the race. But you know, moving slowly. Even 3 weeks later, I could tell when I went out for a run, is like, I could still feel those lingering effects. And it would have been easy to ignore. I mean, just, you know,
you know, part of what we do as ultra running is kind of, it's extreme. So we're all really good at turning that voice off that says, this is hard. Well, it's supposed to be hard. We push through it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That gets us in trouble.
Yeah. So you kept pushing. What have you done for recovery since the...
First thing I did was stop running completely. I didn't run for probably 2 months. I went to the gym still. I was still lifting weights, but I did not run. And then since when I did start running again, I've done... I want to say nothing longer than like an hour. Okay. Most of my runs now are maybe like 30 minutes. And it's been awesome. It's a really cool shift to really think like, oh, I can, you know, get in a workout for health and it makes me feel good, but I don't have to stress about a training plan. I don't have to stress about super high mileage. So that's been the biggest change for me. And I've focused more on sleep, and nutrition, and just overall trying to take, you know, that physical stress off of my body. So,
Well, and then besides the pandemic, I guess it, you know, having to stay, was South Carolina, did you have to stay at home and couldn't get out?
Kind of. Yeah. South Carolina has been very strange. We're already completely back open here, but, I mean, I guess we're a little lucky in that we haven't had a ton of cases, but we didn't go to the gym. Obviously, we had to take a couple months off of the gym, and I stopped going to my local trail because it got so crowded. Everybody.
Yeah.
So I actually started road running again, which is crazy because I'm like such a hardcore dirt loving trail outdoor person. Mm-hmm. I don't like running on the road, but we instead decided to run from our home, you know, mm-hmm. just around the neighborhood. So that was a big change as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I the same thing happened here. Mm-hmm. The trails, you know, people who, you know, they had time off, you know, they're working from home. And so the trails were just super crowded and, it just, and for us, it was more, do you have mountain bikes on your trails as well?
Yeah. And it's so, actually a mountain bike trail. So it was insanely just crazy. And then you had all the people who like the families out there who don't even know what's going on, which is fine. I love to see people outside.
Oh yeah.
But we had stories of like mountain bikers coming around a corner and there's like family having a picnic in the middle of the trail. You're like,
Well, the place where I run is, unfortunately we have, there's mountain bike trails, but then they also have a bridle trail, horse trail. And the mountain, it's tough enough that not many mountain bikes will go on it. And so, there was a couple times I went, it's like, no, I'm not going to fight the bicycles today. And so I went.
Yeah, that's the same thing. I like to go to the trails to kind of get away from people. Yeah. I love people, but I like my quiet time. And so it was just chaos. So we were like, we're not going to go.
Yeah, a few mountain bikes. I mean, you kind of expect that. But yeah, right. those days when everyone was looking to get out of the house, it was just like, and I don't know how the mountain bikers did it. Cause I mean, they had to look out for each other as well. So you started running roads. You're just running more for fun. Anything else? Were you able to continue doing your business? Were you? Your coaching business? Is your coaching online or is it?
It's all online. Yeah, okay. We have local clients, but everything's online. So it's been an interesting time for that. You know, everybody, our clients are all over the country, and we have a couple international as well. And everyone's races are canceled, so it's. Mm-hmm. It's been an interesting journey coaching clients through this time as well.
Right. So how did they feel? Because a lot of them were probably gearing up their training cycle, mm-hmm. you know, already for some of the April and May races.
Yeah. In fact, the toughest ones were we had a handful of clients training for the Georgia Death Race, and that was canceled like the week of, I think it was. So that was hard because they were in taper mode, you know, like ready to go. And sorry, it's not going to happen. That was a tough one for a lot of people. But yeah, we've had, most people have been taking it pretty well. I mean, you know, we're everyone's grateful to be healthy. So you do what you have to do. But a lot of clients have been focusing on different, just switching up their training, you know, just like we talked about hitting the road. I've had pretty dedicated trail ultra runners who are like, I think I might try to PR a half marathon on my own because why not? Like, what else am I going to do? You know? So it's been interesting.
Yeah. So have they taken on any virtual races?
Yep. Oh yeah. We had, most everyone was on the Yeti challenge.
Okay. Right.
And you know, all different versions of the 4x48. I can't even remember the acronym.
I some of my Facebook friends did the same thing.
Yep. And now the virtual race across Tennessee, that's a big one still going on.
Right. Yeah, that's going on, and that's going to go on for another couple months, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's end of August.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't jump on any of those, but our local running club did a stage race patterned after the Tour de France.
Oh, cool.
And so it was, you could run and bike, or you could do run only or bike only. And it was, he did a great job of organizing it. And it was just, it was $10 entry. And it was just basically kind of by invitation only.
Yeah.
But that's the first time I've ever done like a stage race. And so,
that's
We had elevation challenges along the way. So whether it was mountain, you know, a mountain or hills or flat. And so it was a lot of fun. So it was a fun challenge. And
yeah, there's been some really cool ones out there. And it's been awesome to see the running community take these things on, not just for their own entertainment, but also to support race directors who all of a sudden, you know, they don't have income, or even if it's not income based, I know often that money is spent. So if the future of this race is going to continue, there needs to be support somehow. So it's been awesome to see.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, I talked to a guy named Brian Hoover, and he owns a timing company. Mm-hmm. And he times races. I don't know how far his business goes, but I mean, I think he had like 300 of them that were scheduled, and basically had to. He's kind of revamping, and because, you know, virtual races, you don't need the timers.
No.
So there's a lot of a ripple effect of those kinds of cancellations.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. So where are you headed for now? Now you're kind of in recovery mode. Are you going to go back to doing a few ultra?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, it's ultra is my happy place for sure.
Yeah.
and I definitely will be back. But I promised myself I'm going to take this whole year, you know, up until December and just relax.
Okay.
Yeah. Which I think that's something that probably more people need to do, you know, maybe not a whole year, but we definitely, I think I'm speaking for everyone now. I know I shouldn't, but I think our community definitely gets caught up in the FOMO, you know, in seeing all these new races and be like, ooh, I want to do that one, or ooh, I want to do that. And everybody's going here, everybody's going to that race. And that's how you burn out, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be good for more people to be like, okay, here's my one or two goal races for the year. And other than that, I'm gonna relax for a little while. So that's my plan for this year is I'm taking the whole year off. I've been focusing on different things. I've been riding my bike more, which is makes my husband happy. He loves to ride, and he's always trying to get me to ride my mountain bike. And you know, we've taken up stand-up paddle boarding and just lots of different ways to be active, you know, to keep your body happy without all the miles. But I definitely would love to, I still have a long list of races that I want to do, but next year.
So you said you did not get to go to the Barclay Fall Classic. That's still on your wish list?
Yeah, I would love to. I've always been fascinated with the Barclay marathons, even long before I even thought about ultra running. I remember reading an article in Runner's World. If I had to put a year on it, I would say it was either 2009, 2010, back when I was like just training for, you know, road half marathons. And it was about the Barclay marathons. And I remember thinking, that is the craziest thing I've ever heard of. Wouldn't it be cool to do that one day? And, but I don't think I'll ever actually do the Barclay Marathon. So the Barclay Fall Classic is like a good runner up.
Yeah. Remind me, how far is the Barclay Fall? Is that a 50K?
50K ish, you know. There's
right. Well, yeah. From it kind of takes the same spirit as the Barclay, because you can't count on the miles being that length. Yeah.
That's trail running for you. That's never exact.
Right. So what else besides that one do you have?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, I really wanted to do the Vermont 100. I'm from Vermont. And so that's my home state. And, I actually grew up relatively close to where, the Vermont 100 takes place. But of course I didn't know about it at the time when I was younger. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge one on my list.
That is a tough course too.
Hot usually. Well, New England in the summer, you never know what it's gonna be, but definitely rolling. You know, hillier than we have here in Myrtle Beach. That's for sure.
Yeah. some of the guys that I run with, they went out and did the Vermont, and they said, you know, that part of the course goes straight up a ski run, and so
yeah,
that's
it's definitely not easy.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's on my list, you know, and there's lots of the big ones that I would never turn down if I somehow found my way with a Western States lottery ticket that got pulled. I would go for that, of course.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, and then other than that, I don't know. That everybody's got a great big long bucket list, but I would tell you, like, right now it would be Vermont 100. That's probably one I'm going to look towards next. Yeah.
Yeah. So next year?
Maybe if I can get it. Yeah, the lottery, that one's a lottery as well. Okay. And it's in January, I believe. So that gives me some time to really think about.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. So what would you, if you were coaching, you know, one of your clients was in kind of heading toward where you are at, what would be your advice to them to say, not get to that point?
I mean, yeah. So one thing I like to often talk about with my clients is remind them about the big picture. And, you know, we all love to run, and none of my clients and most of us, we're not paying our bills with podium wins. You know, we're not professional runners. We're not going to the Olympics. So for us, what's more important than right now is to think about the big picture and how we'd like to run for the rest of our lives, if we can stay healthy. But if we don't keep ourselves healthy, that's not going to happen. You know, nobody likes to take a break from running. We all love it so much. So if you see yourself starting to go down this path, you know, of burnout or even potential injury, you've got to take a step back and think, what's worse, slowing down or surgery, you know, or what, being on the couch for 6 to 8 weeks or something like that. So that tends to usually get through to people, to kind of make them realize, okay, maybe this isn't what I planned, but maybe now is a good time to step back. And I definitely think that's one of the great things about having a coach. I probably should have had somebody else coaching me last year, other than myself, because, you know, a coach will help kind of, they keep an eye on you in the background of that stuff. You know, I'm always looking at my clients and seeing patterns like, okay, you're training harder, but you're consistently slowing down. Something's wrong here. Or they'll say things to me like, oh, I've not been sleeping very well, or I'm really cranky all the time. That's a sign to me that, okay, maybe we're approaching overtraining. And also with my programming, I am specifically writing out these training plans so that hopefully that doesn't happen. You know, we're approaching this conservatively and safely. But so yeah, I think that's one of the great things about having a coach or working with a coach is that hopefully they help prevent that from happening to you.
Right. Right. So how do you do sleep? That I've heard several people talk about, you know, how the importance of sleep. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people struggle with sleeping. So do you have anything to share about how to make?
I think sleep is a lot like it's a lot like exercise, in that you have to train yourself to do it correctly or to be good at it. Mm-hmm. And I've been on both ends of the spectrum. I have two kids. When they were babies, they did not sleep at all. They hated to sleep. So, you know, I was living on maybe an hour or two a night of sleep for the longest time. But more recently, I've definitely focused on a routine. So, like, first of all, make yourself get into bed at the same time every day if you can. Start making that a pattern. Mm-hmm. I try not to sit on my phone or, you know, watch TV right before bed. It happens though, but that they definitely, you know, research shows that if you can kind of slow down your brain with something like reading or listening to music or, you know, not being overstimulated, that can help. Personally, while technically I will not recommend it to anybody, but personally I take CBD oil and I find that can help me kind of relax.
Uh-huh.
Or even things like, you know, different tea with things like valerian root or chamomile or things that can kind of help you relax can help. But essentially, it all boils down to just making it a routine and making it a habit so that you can get used to going to sleep at the same time and waking up at the same time every day. Mm-hmm. And that works for me. I know that's not the answer for everybody. And some people have legitimate, like, you know, sleep issues, but that's what works for me.
for a lot of people I know, they're turning off the brain is, you know, getting the brain to, or they're getting their mind to quiet down.
Yeah.
Is a real challenge.
Yes, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
My wife, it used to happen to my wife. She'd wake up in the middle of the night, and if she had a thought, it's like, boom, yeah. her mind lighted up and she was awake.
Yeah, we call that the squirrels running around in your head, because that happens to us too. But yeah, it's, and I also find with training that there's this weird like level of, if I don't exercise enough, I don't sleep well. But if I exercise too much, I don't sleep well. So you got to kind of find that balance.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I've never run into exercising too much to not sleep well. I always end up being exhausted. I was like, I wondered about that, because I know that's an issue for a lot of people. So, mm-hmm. So did your nutrition affect your burnout?
Absolutely. Did you feel that? Absolutely. And I think that's another trap, especially ultra runners fall into, is we think, okay, I just did, you know, a midweek 12 to 15 mile training run. I can eat whatever I want, you know, mm-hmm. why not just grab that pizza and that beer or whatever. But when you're constantly giving yourself that excuse to just fuel with junk, you're mm-hmm. not recovering as well as you could. And I fell into that trap, not just because I was making excuses, but also because it was convenient. You know, when we're running and we don't get home till 9 o'clock at night, nobody wants to cook a healthy meal. You want to grab something from the freezer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, that was, and again, it's kind of one of those things that becomes a habit. You don't do it on purpose, but over time it just keeps happening. And the next thing you know, you're living on frozen pizza and beer. Yeah. Yeah. So that when I really stopped and was like, okay, you need to start putting better foods into your body, it makes a world of difference. It really mm-hmm. does.
Yeah. Yeah. Because your body needs that to recover.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It needs it. Yeah. And I just, that is something that I know a lot of ultra runners do is there that the, our diets just aren't what they need to be. And
they're awful. And I mean, you just look at an aid station table. I mean, it makes sense while you're in the middle of a race, all this mm-hmm. junk, it tastes good, but it's probably not the best choice always, you know? Yeah.
So have you ever had a crash from the stuff you've eaten from an aid station? I mean,
oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I am ever since I was a little girl, I've been, the kind of person, my dad used to call me like a gremlin, like don't feed her or do feed her at these different times. Yeah. I've always been notorious for like, I'll be a bubbly talking happy person. And then all of a sudden I'm just quiet and reserved. It's time to feed me. So, so that happens during races. And in fact, during my last 100 miler, I told one of my pacers, I was like, if I start acting weird, you need to make me eat. Like, you have to tell me to eat. And no matter what I say to you in response, don't listen, just give me food. And sure enough, this was around like mile 75 or something. I just shut down and I was near tears. And he just started laughing at me. He was like, Heather, eat a snack. And I have noticed that, you know, depending on what you eat, some things will, like just straight sugar will get you going, but then you're going to crash really mm-hmm. hard. So, but it's a hard balance when exercising, because the more complex carbohydrates, which are going to not give you that crash, are harder to digest when your digestive system is in, you know,
if your your digestive system is taking energy that you need to run.
Exactly. Your body's like, no, we're not going to worry about that right now. So yeah, it is a difficult balance. I think nutrition is definitely one of the hardest things about ultra running for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, have you ever showed up to a race and taken food that you trained with, and then you got into the ultra and you, it's like you didn't want it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was like,
absolutely. I've also made the mistake multiple times of eating things that I've not trained with. Like, let's see, one time I had a ton of watermelon because it was really, really hot and
watermelon
tastes good. But when you eat a lot of watermelon on a hot day over an ultra, it doesn't always fit very well.
Yeah, doesn't always. Yeah. Well, for me, it was Oreos. And I was like, I ran into Air Station. It's like, and I don't eat Oreos just because, I mean, they're full of, you know, full of crap, yes. You know, all of this stuff. And I was like, man, those look good. And I scarfed down like five Oreos and it gave me this quick boost. And about 15 minutes later, it's just like, I could hardly yeah. move.
Yep.
But yeah. Okay. So what is your normal fuel? What's kind of your,
it's definitely shifted over the years. For a while I really enjoyed Tailwind and I still use it occasionally, but I found that I can't drink a lot of it. So I have to alternate, like I'll do Tailwind for maybe an hour or two, and then I'll switch off to some like real food. I've had a lot of luck lately with SIS gels. I think it stands for Science and Sport. I believe it's a UK-based company. But we discovered those about a year ago, and I really, really like those. So those work well for me. And I normally don't like gels at all, but I like mm-hmm. those.
Okay, interesting.
Food during like a longer distance, like a, you know, 50 miles and up. I'm a big fan of potatoes, either boiled mm-hmm. potatoes or potato chips. Mm-hmm. And then I'm notorious for the middle of the night grilled cheese sandwich. I will say
okay.
always. I am a vegetarian. I try to eat vegan, but during an ultra and, you know, heavy training, I'll eat dairy and eggs sometimes. So,
okay.
But yeah, so no meat for me out there. No bacon. I hear it's great on the trail. But
you know, it is for the first 50 miles. but yeah, it kind of depends. For me, it's like I love the idea of bacon, and it just turns to powder in my mouth. Like my saliva doesn't work after 50 miles.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
And so yeah, my pacer kept asking me. I had a cheese quesadilla. And he handed it to me, you know, it's like he's handing me food before we get out of the aid station. And 10 minutes later, he's like, you still chewing that cheese quesadilla? And I says, yeah, I'm working on it. And so, yeah, I just had a hard time getting it down.
Yeah. And that's another hard thing for me for the longest time. When I didn't want to eat anymore, I would stop eating. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't work. You know, obviously that's a recipe for disaster. You've got to keep fueling to keep going, even when you don't want to. So that's another hard lesson learned in the ultra world.
So, we're kind of getting to the time we need to wrap up. Anything else that that you would like to share about your experience with burnout? And
I would just say I would encourage people to just be more aware of what's going on with their bodies. I know my experience is not what's going to happen to everyone. And a lot of people are really good at balancing their training and their nutrition and their rest. But I would encourage you to really stop and think like, okay, I don't feel well. And I know my brain's saying I'm an ultra runner. I'm tough. I can push through this, but should you be pushing through? Maybe, and maybe not, but you know, just be really aware of things other than just your running. If you're not sleeping well, if you're having a hard time focusing, if your spouse or your kids are like, man, you're really mean lately. don't be afraid to, you know, either consult a coach just to see about how your training volume looks, or even don't be afraid to just take time off. It's not going to make you any less of a runner. I know a lot of people think like, oh, I used to be, you know, an ultra runner, but I haven't done one in a while. It doesn't matter. Once a runner, always a runner. Once mm-hmm. you cross the 50 mile or 100K or whatever, you're always an ultra runner. It doesn't matter if you take a few months off or a few years off. It's not a bad thing.
Yeah. Well, and so it's kind of like if you apply the strategy that you have in a race, because in a 100 mile race, you have to pace. I mean, there's the whole planning that you have to do as far as how you're going to approach the race and don't go out too fast. And so it's kind of like taking that whole concept and applying it to your life.
Exactly.
You know, so you're, you know, that it's the same idea as an ultra runner of what you have to do, but it's for your life, not just for one race.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, as tough as our brains are, our bodies are not, indestructible. Like you've got to respect what our bodies are capable of, and they're capable of some incredible things, but they also need rest.
Yeah. Well, and that then, and learning how to understand how your body reacts is a huge thing. So, I wanted to give you a chance to kind of tell people how to get in touch with you. And so, as I said, you and your husband are both running coaches. And so, if someone wants to learn more about you and what you have to offer, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
So you can get in touch with me, either through, my blog. I've been blogging for, 13 years now. And that's relentlessforwardcommotion.com. And there's, you know, a coaching page on there, but also social media. You can find me on Instagram under Relentless Forward Commotion, or our coaching business is Heart Strength and Endurance Coaching, and we are on Facebook, and you can find our email address and everything on there as well.
Okay. Well, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it. And I have enjoyed talking with you, and the things that you have to offer is great. And hopefully sometime, I mean, I follow you on Instagram, and so... hopefully we'll look forward to seeing you, some of the things that you do when you get back into after your year off.
So. Yeah, absolutely. I'll be back. But yeah. For now, I'm just riding around on my bicycle.
That's good.
Hey, thank you for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Trail Talk podcast. If you have not subscribed yet and you like what you hear, please think about hitting that subscribe button so you won't miss anything new. Also, if you do have the time and feel inclined, like the show, please give us a good rating and review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Ultramarathon Mindset, normally recorded as a Facebook Live, sometimes recorded just as a standalone podcast. So you may hear some things that are specific to Facebook Live on this podcast. Thanks again for listening. Hey, if you want to find me, you can find me at theultramarathonmindset.com. You can find me on Facebook. My Facebook page is the @ Ultramarathon Mindset. That's where I, both of those things, places you can contact me. If I can help you with anything running related, mindset related, or if you just have some sort of big goal, a big life goal is like an ultramarathon, in the same way you have to approach it. The mindset that you need to accomplish any big goal is the mindset you need to accomplish an ultramarathon. So that's what this is about. What my time here on this podcast is to help inspire you to go after your big goal, whether it's running related or anything else in your life. And if I can help you, I am a life coach, a mindset coach. Contact me through my Facebook page is the best way to reach me and see if I can help you. I'd be glad to talk with you and see what I can do to help your mindset be an ultramarathon mindset, so you can have ultimate health and peak performance in whatever area of life you want. Hey, thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time.